This podcast is for informational purposes only and does not constitute legal, tax, investment, financial, or other advice. It is not intended to cause or induce breach of an existing agency agreement.
Hello?
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 This is the Vancouver Weather State Podcast.
And welcome back to Vancouver Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Adam Scalina.
And I'm your other host, Matt Scalina.
And Matt, I should say host, but also realtors with Oakwind Realty in downtown Vancouver. And I am so excited for today, times two, because we've got Nick Pallella. He is the executive vice president of Marcon. Probably needs no introduction to people from the industry that listen to this show, because Nick is, well-respected. And he's been on our show earlier, and one of the
mind-blowing
some of the best feedback we've had on a guest being on the show. So if you haven't listened to that, definitely after this, go back and check Nick's earlier episode out. And then of course we've got Jess Reno, who we both met this week for the first time. Really, really great guy, super bright guy. He's the CEO and founder of Nemesis Coffee. Again, in terms of restaurants, cafes in the Lower Mainland, Nemesis will need no introduction. I mean, they're doing next level coffee and environments that are stunning. Like, Great Northern Way, you've got their restaurants like the anchor building now there. So
it's basically, it's I think everybody will be familiar with
Design
Nemesis.
Coffee and Culture.
Design Coffee and Culture, and these guys are not only doing, it's not a collaboration, Adam. It's a long-term partnership at the Pavilion, which is launching soon in Surrey. Con and Nemesis are making a huge investment in Surrey City Center. Marcon's, of course, launching a Project 102 in Park, which is really exciting. But this is something entirely new in the development community, as far as I understand, and we talk about it today. It's a space to connect with the existing culture in Surrey, to build culture, and sort of a signal to the long-term impact that Marcon and Nemesis want to have in that city. So it's a really unique approach, and it's a really insightful and kind of inspiring conversation, I would say.
And Surrey's getting one of the best coffee shops, I think, in the Lower Mainland as well, and in maybe one of their best spaces yet, which is really cool.
Yeah.
So super, super excited for this. We unpack it all, and really, I guess, it, just for context, if anyone's been out to Marcon's Port Moody space where they share with Outpost, and Outpost is kind of now serves that community as a place to go have a coffee or have a beer, this is a similar idea on a larger scale, which is so exciting. And there's lots of lessons, actually, Matt, in terms of if you're interested in real estate and if you're interested in business, there's going to be a ton of takeaways for you in today's episode. And what I love most is the conversation about selecting locations, when Nick's talking about locations and what city centers actually means, because that becomes something that gets thrown around all the time. Where's the center of the city? And we're right downtown. Okay, well, what do you mean by downtown? And what makes a downtown a downtown? And what makes a great location a great location? So it's super useful if you are buying real estate, because I think it adds more nuances to your understanding of location, 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 and it's very powerful.
Yeah. And, it's one of the few conversations on this podcast where we talk about brands like Apple and Wealth
Yes.
Simple in relation to real estate. So stay tuned for that.
Yeah, this is going to be, I know I'm going to get some texts from some longtime listeners and friends of the show that enjoy this episode. But before we get to that, Matt, of course, we are sponsored by Scalina Real Estate. And Scalina Real Estate, our real estate company, is sponsoring a new segment of the show. We're giving it a shot. This is trivia related to the city of Vancouver and real estate in Vancouver. And there's a lot of trivia.
There's a lot of there's a lot of trivia, Adam. It's 2025. We're changing up things here. We got new trivia segment. We also got some new Five Wire questions. I was bored a little bit over the holidays, and
went to work.
With a pen and a pad.
You were in the lab with a pen and a pad. And here's the thing, trying to get this podcast off. And here's the thing, before you give me the trivia question, I got a little trivia question for you that I'm just thinking of. What building, what strata building in downtown Vancouver was also the headquarters for the criminal mastermind on the show MacGyver?
Okay, wait.
Do you remember the show MacGyver? He'd like make a bomb out of a toothpick.
But wait a second. So it was a stand-in on the show?
No, this was the headquarters of the bad guy on the of MacGyver's enemy.
Whew. Well, the tables have turned.
Yeah.
The tables have turned, Mr. Bond.
I'll give you a hint. It's one of the most distinct. Here's a hint. It'll do well if we ever have an earthquake.
It will do well if we ever have an earthquake.
Yeah, something called saddle construction.
Oh, Cube.
Yeah, it's Cube. Yeah, you got it. You got it. I don't know if the listeners at home got it, but Cube was made famous, well, in some circles, the MacGyver circles, as it's featured on, it's one of four buildings. The Cube, that building, the same building was built four different places in the world. And this is the last remaining one. But it's like there's the column in the center. Someone described it to me as like a man or somebody holding two suitcases. And it's almost like the building and the units are the suitcases. So when there's an earthquake, it'll kind of just, they'll just kind of swing around the center column.
Very interesting. Well, you know what? So I had a trivia question teed up.
Yeah.
Well, but I think we've...
No, we're
not going to do two trivia. That was a great trivia question.
Oh, okay. Well, here,
so, okay. MacGyver, the bad guy on MacGyver, I have to go back. his headquarters was the Cube. And then you gave a second layer. It's only one of four buildings and it's the last remaining one in the world.
There was one in Japan. Yeah, there was one.
How did you...
big in Japan.
Yeah. Well, anyway, you know what? We got a long episode. Let's finish this off. We do want to talk about one of our new listings to start off the new year, Adam.
Oh, man. I'm super fired up about this one. Moodyville, which is quickly becoming one of my favorite neighborhoods in the Lower Mainland.
Community.
Matt, I didn't even mention this to you, but I ended up on the at the breweries out in North Vancouver. And just, man, in that area, it's just so... amazing. And it's, you don't really have to come downtown at all.
No, you never have to cross a bridge.
Like it's all right there. It's all incredible. This is a two bed, two bath, 900 square feet, unit 204, 625 East 3rd Street.
Yeah, so the Kindred this is building. At
Kindred in Moodyville. Bright and spacious, two bed, two bath, and den. Huge outdoor space. Like you've actually got two separate outdoor spaces. So the way they've got it set up is like an eating space, and then they've got kind of like an evening lounge space, which is amazing, and parking and storage. The building is obviously an incredible building. So if you
are a couple years old, right? 2019?
Yeah, 2019, and water views, spectacular water views. Yeah, it's got everything you need. If you want to check that out, just head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com where we feature all of our listings and we have the sold plan, which you can download, which is a step-by-step guide for selling for top dollar in the shortest amount of time. It's all there at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. And Matt, without further ado, why don't we cut to our conversation with Nick and Jess?
Yeah, this is an excellent, excellent episode. So stay tuned.
Enjoy. Okay, so we're here with Nick Paolella, Executive Vice President at Marcon, and Jess Reno. He is the CEO and founder of Nemesis Coffee. So great to have you both on the program today. Thanks for making the time.
Awesome, man. Thanks for having us.
Maybe as a starting question, can you start by telling our listeners a little bit about yourself? Maybe we'll start with Nick.
Oh boy, okay, the elevator pitch. Well, I'm Nick Paulella. I'm with Marcon. I am a part of a family company here. I've been around the business now for many years, since I was crawling, I often say, and I'm just immersed in everything that we do, and you know, glad to be a part of our great team.
Fantastic. And you, Jess?
Yeah, Jess, founder of Nemesis, came up in coffee since I was a kid. I needed it as a first job. We didn't have much money, and it was something that I was pushed into doing. And then I found my groove when I was a teenager, kind of stuck with it, opened up my first shop when I was around 18. And it went fairly well. From that project to selling it, traveling the world a little bit, came up with the idea for Nemesis, kicked that off when I was in my early 20s, and now we're here.
And so, Nick, of course, you're what we call a past guest fan favorite. People have heard your elevator pitch. I got a question for you though, Jess.
Yeah,
you came up in coffee. That's something that I don't hear very often. Can you kind of give us a few more details?
Yeah, I'd love to. So we grew up mostly in Scarborough, but we bombed around. We grew up in Ontario. It was like this dream of my dad's to have a cafe. One day we're going to have this coffee shop and it's going to be great. And it became kind of embedded in the back of my mind since I was pretty much crawling that this was going to be in the cards. I don't know if I fell in love with the concept of it that much so until my dad moved out to Vancouver and he was trying to get his life restarted at this point in time. And I was staying with my mom, didn't spend much time with my mom growing up. And missing my dad, he said, I'm going to be out here. It's not going to be easy. Do you want to come? And I said, yeah, jumped on that in a heartbeat. I was 14 at the time. And he was pretty clear, like with our objectives. He's going to be in school. There's going to be minimal time where he can kind of focus on also paying the bills and being a student. It was tougher for him at the time. He's like, you got to contribute. And that was the first thing that we made a pact on. I had to go get a job. We moved into this studio apartment just off of Fraser and Broadway. And the lady that worked there, lived there, that was subletting to us, she worked at Cafe Artigiano at the time. And she helped me get a job. This kid and my conditions where I had to go to school. So she helped me get a job that enabled me to still go to school, but I had to do this super early morning shift. Where I wasn't making coffee. I was prepping salads and clearing up dishes and getting the day ready for the cafe to operate. And then I would go to school, and at times I would come back and finish off like a shift actually working in the cafe while it was open. Everybody was older than me. I thought they were pretty damn unique and interesting. And I rose through the ranks, I guess, fairly quickly because my necessity of making money was really there. I had to pay the bills. They took a liking to me. Me and my dad did our best to kind of get by, but life was still had many obstacles. It was quite challenging. And I needed to make more. And then somewhere in the back of my mind was like, I need to open up one of these things. This is the only thing that I kind of know how to do. So simultaneously going to school is trying to work with my dad, trying to understand how to like make a business plan. I was picking up books from the library, trying to study on my off time on how to write one of these things. And yeah, I got the first one off. My sister and I ended up opening up a shop on Commercial Drive. A year later, we sold that business. She's now got a yoga practice, so very different than the restaurant business, which can be quite intensive. And yeah, I want to keep pushing and like refine the idea of what we could be, how that could show up, the meaning of the value that we bring. Can you make coffee mean something to other people? It's more than just that beverage. And I fell in love with the idea, and yeah, here we are.
Wow. And here we are with a partnership that probably a lot of the people listening may be a little bit confused about, right? Like
so were we at first, don't worry.
Yeah.
So maybe Nick, can you coffee and condos, development and coffee.
Coffee and condos. That's coffee like and condos. Seinfeld's.
Yeah. Coffee
and condos. Like, might have a podcast idea here, coffee and condos. Yeah. But can you tell us a little bit about how you guys found each other and how this partnership works?
You guys are killing me. I feel like since we started this journey 4 years ago at Outpost, I feel like that's what our competitors did to try to dumb down our thinking. It was like, just coffee and condos. Come on, guys. That's how it is. Like, thousands of hours into all this stuff. Coffee and condos. Okay. You go try it. Well, firstly, it's been a real privilege to even be in a position where we're able to think and explore opportunities like the partnership that we have with Nemesis. I don't take that for granted, and every day I want to pinch myself in terms of the opportunities that have been afforded to us as a group, the team here at Marcon, to be able to think about how do we have greater impact in the community, more focus on our customer and the experience, enhancing their experience. And their confidence in what we do, and I actually think what this industry does. And it's been through an exhaustive amount of effort on our end, thinking about how do we have impact in these areas, that led us to thinking about expanding our reach into hospitality and entertaining relationships like the one we have here with Nemesis and Jess's team to create something that is... it's pretty profoundly different from what you know people would ever think of in terms of a pairing of kind of a business and of ultimately like a product to the customer. It's come from a place of like common values and a common interest in kind of basically having a purpose that we're trying to convey to people that there's more than just the core product that we sell that we can offer somebody. And that they should expect when they're making a day-to-day purchase or a big purchase in life. And you know, Jess was speaking to his passion for that, and it's been a journey for them to kind of build a brand really successfully. And for us, we thought the same way. And so things just started as simply as us getting connected. We started by just when we started thinking about how do we bring hospitality into the selling experience. And integrating a physical space where we could do multiple things, we just started tapping into our network. I definitely consume culture, but I definitely am not a culture forward person. I'm not a culture creator, and it was a bit intimidating for me to think about how we could be honestly even picking up the phone and calling a guy like Jess to say, "Hey, what do you think?" I almost following the brands like Jess's and other some of the best culture and retail brands in our city. I'm intimidated by the excellence that they convey every day and the followings that the cult followings that they have. Like developers don't have cult followings per se. Like they're just, that's just not this, you don't have cult followings. We're not, and I never expect to have that, but I really do have a lot of respect for what they do. So we just say, okay, well, this is a bit intimidating because we have a big vision, but we don't know how to convey that perfectly because we have to find someone to kind of mesh with to even expand on our thinking. So let's just start tapping within our internal network, friends of friends and contacts and people to see who we can get in touch with. And so ultimately, that's just what started here is we landed a chat through a mutual contact with Jess, and we started to kind of explain our vision, building on some of the ideas that we've had with our kind of incubator at Outpost, but thinking about how we could have a much more significant footprint in new spaces working with someone like Jess. And it was just, the conversation was just went off without a hitch so far as like finding alignment and then ultimately really getting into a very creative process and low ego, high trust work together to think about what the possibilities were for working together and creating this new space.
And Adam was lucky enough to go out to Pavilion and was kind of wildly impressed by the space that you guys have created out in Surrey. Jess, like, how do you see hospitality meshing with what Marcon's doing?
First, I just want to give Nick some flowers, man, because he's a for the amount of stuff that they got going. Like, genuinely, I appreciate his just how he's kind of communicated how we came to be together. I 1000%, I think the thing that like made us really come together is I got an opportunity to connect with Nick and some of their key team. But there's a culture that's been developed at Marcon, and every single person acts with this gracefulness and humility, but they're killer. Like they're such a strong A team, and their core values they really resonated with us and our team. It wasn't just me. Started to get this idea across the finish line to my team because they want to really understand the context of what we're trying to do here after I was exploring this initially. And it was quickly beloved as some of my core key team members showed up to some of these meetings, got to know the rest of the team, and saw really quickly that, this is sincere. You know, like what Marcon wants to do is a really tasteful, unique approach on how to tap into new cities, bring a level of elegance, culture, mesh the world of what, you know, not just selling condos, is really like, how do you shape shift a neighborhood? How do you leave a mark on it? How do you create a better impression? How do you find, you know, how do you resonate with the people that are already there? And how do you like build upon that and attract additional people that want to treat, you know, like let's say Surrey as it's already Surrey Center, but, you know, really make people fall in love with that neighborhood more than maybe even the love that it gets today. And we share a lot of commonality, core values when it comes to trying to get to that place. We identify Vancouver as a core. We succeed within Vancouver, but there's no reason. There's so many great people out in Surrey, you know? There's so many great people that are out in Coquitlam and at other locations, and they want something like what we have to offer. Everybody wants a good cup of coffee, man. Everybody wants a good pastry. And I think the simplicity of that, you know, it's like when people are buying into a neighborhood, or they're going to lease into a neighborhood, they're going to get an office in the neighborhood. What are the things that you guys think about? I mean, the things that I think about, and I think most people would, is they're like, hey, there's a, let's say I'm buying a home, the biggest decision of my life, you know, or it could be the biggest decision of my life is there a park down the road? What kind of activities? Is there good schooling? But, you know, what's the retail scene like? Is there a good coffee shop? What are the good restaurants? Like, what makes me feel like I'm picking the right neighborhood for my family, or to kickstart a life, or in my retirement, or any of these things? And we, from a real simplistic goal, we just got each other, you know, and delivering on a result that doesn't compromise what we've created today. If anything, just builds upon any level of excellence that we've poured our heart and soul into creating to improve that. And, you know, Nick and team, we're all about it. So it was easy. You know, the process, the collaboration it's been damn seamless, to be honest. And we've been working together now for a few years. So to try to pull these things together.
There's a stitching here to something really important Jess said. Or where we started with this was that when we thought about the communities that we were investing in and that we were building in, we've always had a desire to, you know, see a community improving and moving to more progressive places through the course of development and change. You know, there is a promise when you look at these communities that have had a lot of growth, there's a promise that density and urbanism brings new things and conveniences and effects that happen when you bring density and people together. City building is supposed to allow for a cultural fabric to be established. This is supposed to allow for a specialization. It's supposed to allow for enhancing services. And what we started on in this journey now, I don't know, geez, I guess it was like probably 4 or 5 years ago, but it was just starting by just kind of stopping for a second to evaluate whether or not the things that we were selling, that we were claiming through the sales process, was actually landing at the end of the day in these communities that we were building. Unfortunately, and I think we can all attest to this and what we see, unfortunately, and for various reasons, it's not all on purpose. It just is what's happened. Unfortunately, a lot of communities, you know, especially suburban communities, really anything outside of the core of Vancouver that has had growth and particularly density, high density in areas, particularly around transit, We've been adding mixed use. We've been trying to incite there be vibrancy. On paper, the plant planning's checking the box saying, hey, we've introduced X amount of density of new commercial. We've tried to push for retail design and good ground planes. We've checkbox. We've got new parks, checkbox. We've got new community centers. But those things are technically there, but they're not actually landing in a way that feels like it's all stitched and that it's creating, that there's vibrancy coming together. A lot of the times the retail landscape is generally like a big box or just it's generally quite conventional in terms of the format. And generally I know there's
definitely safe.
Yeah, it's very safe. And generally that's an incentive because the development barriers are so high. Developers want to make sure that they have safe tenants. And even what we found is that a lot of the groups doing things like F&B and retail really well, people hadn't been trying to get their attention to come into these communities and even support a greater understanding of what the potential is within these communities. Like, what do people actually want? What are the needs? Turns out that throughout the region, there's just like a huge need for new amenities and for culture. And people are starved for it. They're leaving these dense communities that they've decided to buy into and been promised that it will have some great features, and it's more affordable than living in the city core, but they're just not there. So they're getting on the SkyTrain, they're going back to downtown or back into the city because that's where they can go back to get the cultural amenities. So we said, look, like, we need to change this. And there's no better way to do that than us trying to put that intention forward from day one in our commitment to a community. We're not promising the building 5 years from now is going to have this kind of culture and community in it. It's not just a shiny rendering that looks like there's a cool cafe or restaurant or something at the ground plane. It's physically there for you to use. It's physically there to create a new bar for the community to set their expectation on what's possible and for them to truly enjoy while this change and transition is happening around them for years. You know, to us, we felt that that's a more genuine and impactful way to connect to community. And ultimately, we think it's a much more engaging experience for customers as they experience what we have to offer.
So, I mean, when I met with you both the other day, I left with the impression that part of this collaboration is like two people that are obsessed with execution. That was what, and it made me think about my own obsession with execution and how elevated yours is. My thinking also was that it's almost like what you're talking about is a little bit intangible because it's like, and this is what you were just identifying, Nick, the idea of like the checking the boxes. It's almost like what, and we keep saying culture, but maybe can we talk about what you mean by culture? Like, what's lacking in the box ticking process? Like, what problem are you solving in your mind?
What we're solving for is the actual experience, not the intent to create an experience, but the actual experience itself. When they think about great restaurants or great hospitality, it's not just a brand and it's not just a space that offers a certain product. It's about all the pieces coming together to make it really feel different. And in doing so, it makes you feel something. You feel, I do when I think I interact around these spaces, just the fact that I had the privilege to go into a great coffee shop is a signal and enjoy that as a signal to my own dignity and my own kind of self-worth in terms of feeling like I buy into these things like music and design, and I buy into good product and I can appreciate the artistry that goes into pulling all those things together. I appreciate good brand. I love the fact that there's a ton of people here that are all trying to enjoy this. And I'm even willing to wait a little while to do this, because I feel like I'm part of something bigger than just the pieces on a standalone basis. And when you have those magic moments, it reflects really positively on someone and it resonates and it's a memory point for them. And I think it's surprising how much even commercial activities in our day-to-day life are adding to our own sense of how the world operates and where we sit within it and what we value and appreciate. And so I think it's all the things it's a sum of pieces coming together and then ultimately having an appreciation for what it is. And it's not that you necessarily have to, often you don't nerd out on every single detail. You're not trying to pull all these pieces apart and understand them individually. I mean, maybe some people who are really discerning are, but what you do appreciate is there's this like net impact. There's this net feeling you have that is just different. The easiest thing I always say is the Apple Store, right? I mean, everybody's been trying to, in the tech space, they've been trying to chase and replicate the Apple Store since it's been created. And it's been decades and nobody's even getting close from what I see still. And they've been evolving their platform over time. But really what they're doing is they want people to come into a space and feel like they should have a different expectation for what the world could be and where they could be within it. That they feel like everything is just right and working. They feel comfortable. And they also feel, and there's no mistake that they're there to buy a product. There's nobody's trying to hide that. It's very genuine. They're still there. I've got something to sell and you want to buy, but I'm offering you something that just, offering you more than the face value of what you came there for. And in that, it does a lot of things. It builds trust. It builds confidence. There's always things happen. Customers always have issues, but I think when you see the lengths that a business is willing to go to connect with their customers sincerely, the customer mm-hmm. also has greater trust that the business is going to be there and not only deliver on the promise of that transaction, but deliver on the promise of standing behind it and doing what they say they're going to do even past that moment. And so that's what all these things come together to be. And I think the best businesses are doing that. And the cultural elements is really just, to me, you're right. It's not necessarily the right word. In some senses, it's relevant to elements of what we've got going on in this program. But in other elements, it's just raising people's expectations and making them feel great about being participating in what you know what we're doing.
You know, I'm just thinking. So, in the layers of these kind of the community engagement here. Like right now with Pavilion, there's an attempt to engage with the community that exists, is already in Surrey City Center, right? And then there's an engagement with people that are potentially interested in Marcon's projects. How does the vision, I mean, clearly the vision that you're outlining, Nick, is a long-term vision. It's not like the presentation center shuts down and so does the coffee shop. Can we talk about how you foresee this vision? And I mean, people can obviously, you can kind of point to Outpost and presumably it's somewhat similar, but.
It's a great example, but I will point to Outpost because it helps kind of signal what we're trying to do here. And it just at a different level with even more focus. At Outpost, we said we would be over the moon if someone had enough confidence and trust in what we were offering as a community experience and see our sincerity, that they would show up and post up on their laptops and hang out inside Outpost for the day. We would be pinched if people are coming by with their kids and hanging out and pulling out the games and, you know, making a mess and just hanging out the way they would in any other coffee shop that I've seen that, you know, is, you know, welcoming and great for families. You know, we would be totally pinched if people who are contributing to culture and influencing culture in the community are showing up here and seeing that it's adding to it and they want to talk about it and they want to bring their friends. And that, you know, was something that we didn't know if that was possible, but that was our aim. And doing it at Outpost, we saw that and then some. You know, we've seen, the number now is wild. I think we've seen close to a million people, million visits to Outpost. Like, you know, and obviously it's lots of repeat customers and whatnot, but like we've seen a lot of traffic. It is a real culture place in that community. It is a real community melting pot. People are socializing, they're engaging and doing all the things people do out in their world, and they're using Outpost for it. And over the last few years of working with that concept, we've just learned so much and we translated all of that into what we're doing for it. And in response to that, that's when we connected with Jess and said, okay, like we want to raise the bar. And now learning more about the industry, learning more about like who's leading in this industry, like really driving it across the country. I mean, what Jess and his team are doing is like, they're like outliers entirely in the country for their product and what they're doing from a hospitality standpoint. Like they really are. And that's even why the coffee condo thing drives me nuts. I'm like, these guys, it's not just coffee. Like this is like, they've got like they're putting down the best pastry game in the country. Like in the country, they're not, their coffee is leading the charge. And it's not just that, it's wrapped up in an entire environment when it comes to design and music and a number of other elements that is just, it's so strong. And we said, okay, well, if you know, if I remember calling just saying like, shit, like, I hope the guy even just returns my phone call. That would be great. And it's like the fact that we were able to hit it off and then just like, it was so easy for us to go deep. Like it was just what you saw on the outside about what it felt, what I assumed and what our team assumed was all the energy that it takes to get the brand as tight as they've got it was exactly that. And it was easy for us to line up because it was like, we went right into the weeds. We went right into the heart of what makes everything that they've got going on good and how we could be a part of that. And so in a sense, it was easy because we went right to, you know, the formula for success. And then we really just jammed on it together in terms of how could we take this unique relationship to somewhere that, what do they say, the whole is better than the sum of the parts, like just take it totally a different level for both of our groups and actually have an even greater impact in what either of us have respectively done for our customers in the past. And I think you can say that. I mean, like you said, Jess, the other day, I mean, the coffee bar you guys got now in Surrey, I mean, it's like
world class, man. Yeah.
It's wild. It's really cool.
Yeah, and we're all pissed off at Matt's comments about coffee and condos, Jess, can you talk a little bit about like what are you guys doing? Like, because I mean that it when you were just talking about Nemesis, and I mean, I've been to the Great Northern Way location, and it's phenomenal coffee. I haven't had the pastries yet, but can you talk about what you're doing and your vision for Nemesis, and then talk a little bit about what's happening at this specific location?
Yeah, I mean, the way that we like to see Nemesis, even just by name and by iconography, it's an inverted heart. You know, I think it resonates more on the human level. It's not a right side up heart for a reason. You know, it's flipped on its axis. It speaks to its name. Nemesis was built with this kind of counterculture-ish kind of mindset to be very sincere. It's not all like peaches and roses and all these things. There's layers to the community. There's layers to how to best interact with it. There's a way to be very genuine in your approach. I think coffee is such an excellent conduit. As my dad used to say when I was a kid, you know, the rich man, poor man stand in the same lineup. You know, it's a very affordable luxury. We get to meet a whole hell of a lot of people at any one of our given stores. We see, you know, a million plus people a year. We have like, I mean, just collectively, man, we're doing some serious traffic, and each one of those things have an opportunity, like each one of those transactions is this opportunity to engage. It can help be a change agent in the community. And the way that we like to think of Nemesis is kind of like that linchpin. You know, once we show up and you build it correctly and you really deliver and you know, we obsess almost maybe to a fault about the little details and the design, the music, its curation, the sound levels, what's going on that plate, who's making it, you know, where are we sourcing all this stuff from? Even if you want to not pay attention to any of those things when you walk into our shop, you don't have to. You're just, you know, there's something that's happening subconsciously that you enjoy. But if you want to go and dig a little bit deeper, there's a lot more of a story there. And I think that's where the people start to feel it's like what Nick was saying. There's this established trust. It's built in a way that comes from an incredibly sincere place. And we want to find ways that when Nemesis shows up and can and is with the mindset of being a linchpin, is that no matter what neighborhood that we go into, we want to help make it even more enjoyable, better, feel like if Nemesis wasn't there anymore, people would be like, what? What happened? Yeah. You know, so, you know, and what an easy partnership it's been, really, because most of the team at Marcon has already been through Nemesis. They already, that's part of their rituals and their routines. Connecting with this team is like, oh shit, we're just gonna be able to do one together? Crazy. And then from the bar standpoint of what we're trying to set, Surrey is not a lesser version. All the lessons that we've accumulated in our career, especially in time with Nemesis, plus this, our own killers on our team coming together with the same core values, we're applying them to Surrey. Like Surrey, it's going to challenge anything that we've ever done, if anything, exceed it. So Mara hopes is, you know, we don't want to be complacent. We want to force our own obsolescence and improve. And building this thing, I swear to God, man, it might actually just end up being like the best cafe, restaurant, culture hub in our country. And that's our goal.
And this isn't our only one. We've got two of these this year, and the next
exactly.
one is even bigger and more engaged, and probably a conversation for a different day. But
it's crazy.
We're building forward into something here. Our teams have been so plugged into every dimension, and it's so cool that way. I mean, I think I might have mentioned in previous chats with you guys that we're vertically integrated. But when we talk about, like, what does that even mean? It really boils down to having a stacked bench of people who have deep experience in a number of areas of what we do. And we're all intensely pulling through, thinking about every dimension of not only the space, but how we use it, how we leverage that for the impact we want to have, and really making the most of every single part of the opportunity. And what comes together with that is something that becomes really special. So, you know, you'll see that our selling experience is wildly different. It's not just pairing two physical spaces together that are really well designed. It's like, it's everything. It's as much into the elements that Jess talked about in terms of, it's all about as a team as much as it is about the product and how people interface with that. We've totally reinvented how we are approaching that with our customers and how we take advantage of this great relationship we have and ultimately change the pace of the selling experience. I think we want to, you know, our whole team has been focused on the point that we want people to understand that they can expect more from our product. And they can see that. They can see the quality built in. They can see our push for what really good experience is. And they can feel it when we're talking to them. Because ultimately, we are not leaning into condos as a commodity. That is not going to be our brand. That's not, we've been steering away from that for years. And yes, the market can be busy. There can be lots of demand at times, sometimes not less. The point is, we want to have wonderful product and that people can physically feel, and how we're interfacing them while we're selling it to them, while we're allowing them the chance to learn and to make their own decision about what they want to do when they're making such a big purchase. We want to do that in an environment that's really conducive for that. So the fact that, you know, we're able to think all those details through and our team is deeply thinking about this is going to make something that's very practical. And some of what we're talking about today is hard to abstract because seeing is really believing with a lot of these things. I think that's where a lot of these ingredients come together to make sense. But it's been a lot of fun to be able to be thinking through every single detail and actually operationalizing that. And then our team buying in, and like Jess said to me the other day, he says, well, I see a bunch of people out at, you know, Great Northern Way, like they're all jamming in there, hanging out, the sales team, and that they're just living and buying into the culture. They're absorbing it, trying to really think and feel it, and they're doing it on their own time, trying to really get their head in and around what this whole thing is about and what kind of culture we can build. And they're passionate about it themselves. And that is so, so exciting to have that kind of intrinsic motivation coming out of everybody to do something like this.
Maybe changing gears a little bit, but why Surrey and why now?
Well, for us, we've been taking a position these days where we want to more intensely focus on some key communities in the region that we think we can have a long run presence in, and that what we have to offer, our product approach, our quality, and our values will result in great outcomes for the community that we can create. We can do it over a longer period of time. So Surrey, why Surrey? Well, for us, we identified Surrey as a very important place in the region now going forward for the foreseeable future, what they have done and the ambition of creating a central downtown district is unlike anywhere else. Like outside of the core of the city of Vancouver, which really started building its downtown core 100 years ago plus, every other municipality, perhaps with the exception of the city of North Vancouver, they have a pretty focused downtown they've been tenfold about. But a lot of the other major stuff, especially in the last decade, it's largely been like regional shopping center focused growth. Like transit has followed into these nodes. They're good places and the growth is there happening for a reason, but it hasn't gone with the like major city building moves that Surrey has been ambitious enough to take on. And they started that years ago with what initiatives the city took on with moving City Hall, with designing a downtown district with some major public amenities. And that was compounded by then a number of other institutions and levels of government all stepping up to support that. You know, you've got the provincial government investing, you've got the federal government investing, both in transit, both in institutional assets, supporting universities getting building out in this community. And you've got one of the fastest growing and diverse ethnically and economically municipalities in the region. And they're snowballing on what we feel is really the infrastructure they're putting down is a really good starting point for true city building. And so when what I was talking about earlier in terms of like, hey, checking the boxes, not just, you know, are communities checking the boxes as they grow to make sure they've got all kind of the core elements, or are they really leaning into it? Like Surrey's gone the full distance themselves in as they've grown over the years. And what they've now established is there and you can feel it. So the now part is we started looking at this area about 4 years ago, and we said, okay, well, if it feels like the ingredients are there now in Surrey for us to be able to respond and do what we do best there. And to come to Surrey, we want to be in the core. Like we want to be center of the ice. And that so our focus in terms of where we want to develop and what we have coming forward with 102 in part, it is truly center of the ice. And it's because we feel like the billions of dollars that have been invested in that community are now being benefited within that immediate vicinity and compounded by obviously the regional transit that's being built now. It was worthy of the investment for us to get into that market from a development standpoint, but also to invest in the community with what we're doing with Nemesis. You know, we want to make it clear to the community that we're there for the long run and we're there to create impact and we're there to add to the fabric when we can show people what we're willing to commit to and to enhance the commercial and cultural landscape. We're going to be able to believe it because they're going to see it physically there for us. And hopefully that's the confidence they have when they see what we have coming up over the years ahead in Surrey, that's what we're going to deliver to them at the end of the day. And it is going to really, I think, reset the bar for what, you know, some of these elements of the community are going to end up looking like in the future.
Hey, everyone. Pardon the interruption. We just want to take a quick minute to thank the following sponsors who make this show possible.
We are also sponsored by Oakland Realty. This is our real estate brokerage, best brokerage in the city, hands down. If you are in the industry, a new agent, an aspiring agent, somebody just looking to make a change, new culture, new energy, new resources, head over to oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. That's oakland.com/join, type in VRP 2020. Not only do you get to meet Michael Morgan and the gang, the bigwigs over at Oakland, you get a huge incentive for first going to oakland.com/join, typing in VRP 2020.
And it sounds like there's more than 102 in Park in the pipeline.
We've got hooks up in a number of places.
I feel like we talked a little bit about this, Nick, last time you were on the show, but I feel like you guys have elevated it, this kind of push towards culture and the partnership with Nemesis since. Is there anybody else in development? Like, it doesn't seem to me like anybody else is doing this in Vancouver. Are you still looking to like the Apples of the world for inspiration? Are there other development companies elsewhere where you're like, these guys are really have executed on what we want to do? Or are you forging a new path here? Can you just kind of speak to the inspiration in terms of others?
Yeah, sure. I think I just want to reposition maybe one element of what you were outlining there. Our purpose, our obsession is about quality. It's not about culture. Culture is an important element that we think we can impact, but it comes from, at the end of the day, being obsessive about quality. And it's been something we're entering into our 40th year this year. And it's been something true since my dad started it in the 80s, that quality was synonymous with Marcon. Quality can also be a bit of a nebulous word for people to kind of understand, like, what does it really mean? And so for us, well, for us to demonstrate quality, we want to look at many different sides of what that is. And ultimately, at the end of the day, we want to build great product for normal people and have them feel really confident about the purchase and the investment decisions they're making. And we can also add to their experience with us by bringing in some of these other ingredients, by leaning into culture, by leaning into just elevating the expectations around what they can expect to receive in the building, not just the unit they're buying, but in the buildings we're building and whole, these mixed-use buildings. We're just trying to elevate that. So I'm just conscious in a world today where affordability is a challenge, where confidence in developers is challenged, getting across the line and delivering a good product at the end of the day. That's actually our focus. That's really what it's all about. And culture gets to weave itself in there, among other things, but it's ultimately going tying back to that. And we have, that's what we're focused on. And I think it's important that folks recognize that. And we want our feet on the ground always when it comes to what kind of at the end of the day, and at its core, what we're doing. And I think this is why I use the Apple example. Their product at the end of the day is ultimately what we're all after. And the quality is built into that product. They have the integrity in their own brand to put their logo on the chip inside the phone that you never see. But they do it because all of the pieces matter. And that's what we've often found building our buildings. I think people try to evaluate quality when they're looking at cabinetry and they're looking at, you know, plumbing fixtures and whatnot. I can tell you that that's really not quality. That is the fit and finish and polish of the final deliverable. It's the design, and anything can look good in a display home. The quality that we aspire for is quality in the core of the building. What you're physically getting, and a lot of the stuff you're actually paying for, the expensive stuff you're paying for, is behind the walls of stuff you never see. That's what we're committed to do, right? And so when we look to the competitors, we look to just inspiration, really. It's less about looking at competitors. It's more looking for inspiration about where how groups communicate that. We found that in other industries, groups communicate their quality by showing it in different ways, in different areas of their offering, in different experiences that they share with their customer, so that the customer can build a confidence and awareness of just how engaged and tapped in the business is and what they're focused on, what they care about. And it builds confidence that when they say they build quality, even in the things that you can't see and touch and feel, that it's there.
Yeah.
And you know. And so that's so our inspiration comes from those types of businesses, and it shows up in the retail landscape, it shows up in the tech space, but I think it even shows up in services. You know, these days I've been noticing the differences in the ecosystems that, you know, even online digital service companies are building. You can really feel a difference in terms of the presence that they build, and especially around intangible products, they're able to build a really strong presence and awareness and a confidence that, you know, you're ultimately leveraging a good product. I even look at like products like Wealthsimple, amazing products where they do a whole bunch of things right beyond just a trading, like an equities trading, you know, process, which everybody can do. That's essentially commodity. They've been able to demonstrate that they're different and that you won't know until you try it, but they're able to convince people it's worth it. And I think for the most part, it's been working. And so our inspiration comes from businesses wherever they lie that are focused on really giving a value to the customer and delivering quality in different ways.
Wealthsimple is such a great example. I've never, I use Wealthsimple and I love Wealthsimple, and you actually put there's something about it that you're like, yeah, this is just a great company. I just, there's, and a quality company. And they really care about making sure, like, that app doesn't have, there's no bugs in that app. It works. It's just, and it's so, the interface is so great. Anyway, you've nailed it, because I've never really thought about it. I've just really enjoyed using that service.
And they deliver value.
Yeah. And their newsletter is incredible. That's one of the news, you know, I get 1,000 newsletters a day. That's one that I actually open.
I just, you know, it's important for us, just because we want to, ultimately people are going to think what they think about what we do. And we hope that ultimately our customers and community really see it. But this is not for our vanity. This is really because we think we can make a difference for a customer. And that so far from what we've seen, they've appreciated it. And the communities have appreciated that. And I've gotten some wonderful feedback from people over the years, people I would never have expected sending me random emails talking about their experiences with some of the stuff we've even done at Outpost. And that fills our cup in a big way. And we're going to do our best to kind of chart our course with that kind of commitment as we go forward. And you know, we'll see where it goes.
So I just had one question for Jess, because I was thinking about it earlier, and a lot of people think of, like, the independent coffee shop, right? And I'm thinking you started on Commercial Drive. You mentioned kind of counterculture. I'm kind of curious, is it what Nick's talking about, this kind of inspiring push for culture, for quality, sorry, and building community that kind of inspired you to join on? Like, can you talk about how Nemesis, the brand Nemesis, kind of fits in with this and why you guys joined with Marcon?
Yeah, there's, I guess, two parts to that and the way that we see it, especially as we entered into, we built this building on Great Northern Way in conjunction with Perkins & Will, an architecture firm that actually did the flagship Apple store in Vancouver across from the art gallery, phenomenal team. And we saw the value of doing something, you know, in many ways that is very difficult to do and kind of spectacular. Maybe not difficult by way of just building the building, but to service the cost that it would take to do something actually quite specialized like this. And we saw we see every single day this tremendous value add to that community. The impact that it's had, it is such a destination location, but it is so damn costly. And as far as restaurateurs go, there is an immense amount of talent that exists here, but they might lack the acumen that it takes to get a project like that across the finish line, or how to do that without necessarily selling out to someone else who doesn't have the same values because they have this pipe dream of doing something really special. And by way, you start to see, you know, the degradation of our food scene. But in many ways, I view them as cultural epicenters. So we've had the privilege of, we don't have outside teams and partners. It's been us, and we've, not because we want to, at one point in time, we needed money, we needed investment, we needed to try to get things across the finish line. And that was incredibly challenging for someone to rationalize that some early 20-year-old kid without a bunch of assets or some sort of backing is going to be able to make good on this investment. But our passion to get across those finish lines and to do something actually exceptional quality and with the right intentions was more compelling than giving up. So we just kept pushing, and we built the thing that we thought was right. And we still built it in the midst of a pandemic. And we had another store that just opened up, and it was the beginning of the pandemic when that one just opened up. And our first store, which is in Gastown, that kind of went off a cliff in that neighborhood there for a while. And we were faced with what felt like, at the time, immeasurable odds to stay open and shutter. And it started to shift our thinking on how we would strategize moving forward if we were to open up more locations, and which we wanted to do. We want to grow. I think growth also comes organically and naturally. We have so many great people on our team because we're so damn tight-knit. They believe in what we're trying to do. They see us growing beyond even hopefully our city, but only if it feels exceptionally right. So they want to stick around. So we want to grow, but to grow effectively, if we're going to drop all of this capital into someone else's, you know, asset, we improve the value of that asset, and then we're fighting for a very small percentage at the hopes that we can even pay back the debt. It's crazy, you know, and you get hit with another pandemic or anything that is not on schedule there. That's all it takes. And you see, like, as it did during the pandemic, so many great restaurants got washed away. You know, they were not rock steady enough. We built out the ops internally. We really worked very hard on the infrastructure to make sure that, you know, when we end up at the table with, let's say, Nick and team, we don't just talk about coffee that we sell. We can jam out on the business. We can jam out on the optics. We can jam out on the legal. We know how to speak the same language to also give them the confidence, because we had to build it. You know, we had to really build that internally, even if it's small. To this day, is pretty damn rock solid. And I'm really proud of how nimble we've had to be and how mindful we've had to be of all those pieces come together to just enable us to do a great job at the end of the day. But moving forward, we don't want to compromise on the quality of these projects. And that was part of the, you know, structure in which us working together with Marcon is like, do we know the value that we can bring to this neighborhood? I mean, we've got a proven track record. And if you show up to any one of our locations, but let's just take Great Northern Way particularly, it's not just the school behind us that's really driving that traffic. It's not really the tech office that's driving that traffic. They show up, but, you know, like the tech office, half the people work from home. You know, it's been this neighborhood that's like, it was practically just crickets. And then we built something really special and we stand behind the product that we're creating and the intention on it as well. And man, it's so busy. You know, it's so busy because people actually really want that. And now they're falling in love with this area. Now this whole area has been coined South Flats, and there will be these new condos going up and transportation's coming there. And it's all, I mean, the logo, the icon for their branding of South Flats is actually the Great Northern Way building. That's how, I guess, impactful this shop has been. They're tailoring it around the thing that, you know, we've worked tirelessly on creating from a very genuine place. And it works significantly well. It'll only work better as more people come. And it was just such a no-brainer because Nick and Marcon were so aligned with the thing that we're trying to bring to the table. We couldn't bear it. We want to grow. We couldn't bear that exclusively to do this effectively, especially on off the tail end of the pandemic for the restaurant scene. Like it was challenging, but we had the pieces in place to still do it successfully. And that's where they stepped up with their investment on these projects and recognized those things. And it just made it was so damn easy to get on the same page. To answer a bit of a question that you posed to Nick on, are you seeing other developers do this? We also have the privilege of communicating with so many damn developers in our city. Every single one of them wants to have a nemesis or something like nemesis at the base of their building or something. A lot of them are maybe a bit of like the old guard, these concepts that might in some ways feel slightly intangible. They haven't gone there on their own regard. They're starting to see or hear murmurs of these type of deals or the structures around, like, you know, building this quality first project that has a change on the landscape of whatever neighborhood that you go into. They're reconciling that, but I'd say like Marcon's much further ahead than and many that we've communicated with. Nonetheless, there's been a lot of deals that have been thrown out like on the table that are like turnkey projects. You know, like they'll do it to our design spec. I think even on many of those, which we've said no to, like a lot of them actually, the reason being is that the intention behind the partnership and what we're trying to create just wasn't really genuine enough, you know? And that I've had zero questions around that intention behind Marcon's decision-making process here. It is as exactly what Nick is saying, man, you know? And it's a real ass dude. He's a good guy. And his team is trying to do things that are challenging and difficult. And they're all banded behind this vision. And everybody plays their part and harmoniously pretty damn well to execute something. And I think truly what I see when I'm in their office right now, you know, truly what I see is the inspiration that people have because they really, the team believes in what the work is that is being created here. And it might just on surface appear like, yeah, a product through a condo is being sold, a coffee is being sold, but it's so much more that's happening there. It's shape-shifting the way that a neighborhood can function, the trust that people are having, the recognition of, you know, this individualistic approach on like who's buying and why and how do we meet them where they're at and how do we show them that this is the real deal. and then not just do it one time? How do we continue to build upon this notion time and time again? And that's honestly what's happened here. And as far as Marcon's around, we hope to just keep working with them because, it feels like we really have like an incredible counterpart. I couldn't say that.
Jess is a big hugger.
Yeah, dude,
he's the only guy come in for a meeting. I've hugged him six times before he leaves.
Yeah. Maybe I'm missing something from my childhood, man. I'm just trying to catch up. I'm joking. No, for sure. It's genuine love, man. When we show up here, it's like I walked in this office first and before I could even get to the computer, I think I got pulled into like three different directions. And it was mostly just like, hey, how you doing? You know, like what's going on? Yeah. But it's awesome, man.
Maybe just thinking about, we've talked a lot around what's coming, but we haven't actually talked about 102 in Park. Nick, can you kind of give us an outline of what people can expect with the building?
Well, yeah, for sure. 102 in Park, we're super excited about. I think the location is obvious by the name. The 102 Avon City Parkway, for anyone who's familiar with Surrey, you can't get any more central to the community. You know, usually people take liberties in how they market the product and its proximity to things. Like this is, there's no liberty here. It is really right at the core of all this infrastructure that Surrey's built in their downtown district. And it's a cool building. It really defines, you know, a lot of effort we've been putting into mixed use over the years. The building has like five uses in it. And it's got multiple commercial uses and multiple residential uses in it. And big portion of that is the condo component. And that building came together through us thinking about how could we best leverage this location we're in and all of this infrastructure that's built, and how could we build a really engaging building from the ground plane up? It's our feeling that people, obviously we're focused on them having a really quality home, but we think people are going to live outside of their homes hugely in Surrey City Center. And so we want this building to have a response to that. And we've used every inch of it. We've got a really engaging ground plane. We are thinking about the type of ground plane and retail offering and partnership we can do with Nemesis and that permanent environment. We've got office in there, and we've got a really institutional quality. We've got something of a quality that you would want to see in cities over decades. It's not something that just stalemates after 10 years, which often you see in kind of the suburbs again, in terms of developments, like they eventually feel old and they eventually feel like they've lost their polish. And we really wanted to make sure we have a building because of the location and its permanence in such an important spot that it really will feel relevant for a long time. And so we've thought about how we can use every inch of that building, from all the amenity decks and the roof areas, how we have a really engaging ground plane. And so that not only creating great homes, but we're also creating a really great response to how people are going to be living outside of their homes, and also pride of ownership. We want to have people feel like they're living in the prime spot of the community, that they can leverage the most of the amenities, and that they can be proud to go downstairs and be a part of the scene that we're going to be creating there, and the cultural, the really elevated kind of cultural program we want in that environment. And we think that it's time for Surrey, in a location of that privilege, to get something that is going to feel really premium and really, really urban, like really urban in a way that you would expect in a true downtown core. And so, you know, that's what really excites us. We're really, you know, we're design nerds. We're nerdy about a lot of things, if you haven't noticed. And so we thought about a lot of details that comes together to make a really highly mixed use building successful. And that all of the intricacies to the building and the complexities of it are adding to it in terms of quality and the outcome at the end of the day. And it's really sharp. And even just from a interior design standpoint, our team has nailed it, in my view. Like we really thought deeply about the product and what we want to, the kind of impact we want to have from an interiors experience. I mean, not just the home itself, but we wanted cohesion between the home, the circulation space, how you move through space to your home, how the amenities work, and also how that ties into the commercial offering. Like we want to just design cohesion through the whole thing, which is often not what you get. You get pieces, you get a series of design moments, but when you put them all together, you can't necessarily feel that tightness and cohesion across the whole thing. It is really, really visible at 102 in Park, and it's really visible at Pavilion with Nemesis, because the design ethos carries through the whole thing. So, and it was easy too. We have similar, with the Nemesis, we have similar aesthetics. And we started thinking about what is best in class? What is timeless? What does quality feel like in terms of design? And, the cues that we take from modernism and lighting and type of furniture design, all of these things were resonant with what Nemesis does. And we were able to carry that through in the whole product. And that's what people are going to see at the building at the end of the day. It's a really, really tightly considered and premium and timeless offer. And we're excited about that, coming through in the next number of months.
Oh, fantastic. Well, Adam,
I'm just conscious of just don't bill us for your time, both of you, because we've kept you very long. We do have this segment called the Five Wire, though. Five lighthearted questions, although Matt's tweaked them. I don't know how lighthearted they are anymore.
2025, and they're getting increasingly less lighthearted. So
yes,
see if you guys can handle them.
But we like to cry our way off the show now. But anyways, they're can you stick around for that?
Yeah.
This podcast is brought to you by Spark, the new development sales and marketing platform.
Adam, the stakes have never been higher for launching a condo project, and today's developers and brokerage teams need to leverage the best tools in order to hit their financing thresholds and to sell out their projects.
Spark is an all-in-one sales and marketing software that includes a comprehensive CRM, inventory management, email marketing, and digital contracts. These tools are custom tailored to the pre-sale process to help you capture leads, increase inventory yield, and transact contracts seamlessly.
And here's the best part, Adam. Spark's team is headquartered right here in Yale Town, and they have over 10 years of experience in helping BC-based developers and brokers bring their projects to market.
So if you're selling a new development, you need to check out Spark at spark.re/VREP. That's spark.re/VREP. And remember, Matt, you can't light the pre-sale world on fire without a spark. Okay, perfect. So maybe we'll start with Nick. So what's a restaurant? And let's just rule out using Nemesis here as the answer.
Nick, we also have a dope bakehouse, so you can use that. Yeah. plug, let's go.
Plug. What's a restaurant in Vancouver that you think more people should know about?
Oddfish.
Oddfish. Nice one.
Yeah.
How about you, Jess? Same question.
man, there's so many. But my friend who just opened up Elm, I think is a sleeper, and he's doing some amazing things. So go check out Elm. But there's La Quercha on West 4th.
La Quercha.
La Quercha is unbelievable. I think people need to go hit up La Quercha.
Is Elm, is that on...
It's the best pasta game in the city.
Yeah.
It's legendary.
Yeah.
And Elm's on Main, right? Is that on Main?
Yeah. Yeah, actually, now I'm saying La Quercha and Oka. If you get an opportunity to go to Oka on Commercial Drive, it's absolutely phenomenal. Just talking about best passes.
The problem that Jess has is that he's just figuring out who he's going to piss off by making a recommendation.
Yeah, dude. Yeah,
exactly. run through.
Let me just write this super long list, right? yeah. No, they're great. And Elm opened up on Main Street. It's by directly beside Zirac. I think that's Main Street.
I've been there. Sixth. That's a great spot. Yeah. Awesome.
One that made the cut from last time, maybe we'll stick with you, Jess. One book everyone should read.
Ride of a Lifetime by Bob Iger.
Oh, I've read that. That's great. That's a great book.
Yeah, actually, I got two, man. I'm sorry. And Unreasonable Hospitality.
We've had that one.
Yeah, I'm just snatching Nick's recommendations right now.
I feel like, is that mandatory reading at Marcon?
This guy's killing me. Like, both of those are in my top, three.
And we didn't rehearse this. We're rocking the same headphones and we're reading the same books. This is why we're value line. But yeah, I that book, Bob, I go back to it. I've probably read it like now three times, listened to it twice on audiobook, and it's an exceptional book. And he's been so good at distilling just the lessons of his life and really just telling a really great story of like a Jersey boy all the way to running Disney and responsible for so many exceptional acquisitions, but still building upon these acquisitions, his friendship with Steve Jobs, you know, hearing about cancer and it being terminal before going live with the fact that they're acquiring Pixar for, you know, just this unbelievable deal, purchasing Fox. These are big conversation, big gestures. Obviously, there's so much to study within it, but he's really great at deducing those things. And then, yeah, Will Goddard and what he's been able to do. Will Goddard is pretty much in many ways like the disciple of the guy that wrote Setting the Table, Danny Meyer. Danny Meyer, who's responsible for Shake Shack and also for so many other, like Union Square Hospitality Group, probably one of the most prolific restaurateurs. Daniel Hum, Will Goddard, yeah. And the things that he talked about, it's just not applicable to hospitality in the restaurant world. It's applicable to everything. And he actually even talks about selling condos and real estate and just how you can deliver on an exceptional, hospitable experience to feel very sincere and genuine and go above and beyond. And it's, you know, so damn interesting that Nick has read that, because I think a lot of what Archon's actually doing and their approach and the things that we jam out on is that exactly, you know, like we don't have to go as hard as we do. We don't have to be like the challenge of these things. We don't necessarily have to, but it is the right and better thing to do. And that's what we care to do deeply, you know? So yeah, it's cool, man, that you read that. That's awesome. So, those are my two. I'm sorry. I'll give you all one.
Right. All right, Nick, do you have
any left?
Yeah, any left.
I got one. And, you know, I'll say I read this pre political changes, but I actually think it's even more relevant to read it now. Is the Elon Musk book by Walter Isaacson?
Yeah, excellent.
I think it.
Yeah.
Again, fascinating story from someone who's come an amazing distance over a lifetime with all kinds of different adversity and challenges and whatnot. But I think it helps to kind of place like where we are in time right now. And it wraps up the history as of, I think, the end of 23. So it's quite current. And I think it really speaks to a number of things, both in kind of understanding this character, which is who's driven like profound change in the world. And of course, look at the world we're in today in terms of being having a direct influence in some of the greatest power in the world, and also just like where's the world going in terms of products and particularly around this information age that we're heading into around AI. I think it starts to speak to kind of like the central motivations for where a person like him is coming from, and I think no doubt just a world that we're all going to have to respond to in different ways as we go forward. So yeah, I was I took a lot from that, a lot of perspective from reading that one.
It's good. Nice. We have not had that one on the show yet, so that's good.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal book. That's great.
Question number three we'll stick with you, Nick. What's a strong opinion you held 5 years ago that has completely changed today?
Yeah, these are getting tough.
5 years ago, I think my opinions about how people navigate and balanced life and the formula for doing that has changed for me after having kids. And so, you know, I pride myself in trying to be as balanced as I can. And so I have, you know, pretty opinionated around how people can go about doing that. But I certainly added a whole nother lens that I probably should have reasonably expected that would change. When you have kids, in terms of how that evolves one step further and how do you maintain that balance? I think my views on what that looks like today is just very different than it was 5 years ago, of course.
Great answer.
Yeah. Jess? No kids.
Yeah. No kids. I think the purpose that we can bring the meaning of our impact, no matter the medium, has shifted. And what that looks like from a challenge standpoint, what we can take on and how to best make people also believe in themselves and their capabilities, no matter that medium. So in the case of, you know, coffee, a lot of people just like, oh, it's a barista, you know, and that's all that is. And I'm like, oh no, what we can create and its impact and what that means can actually have significant impact on just the day-to-day impressions, engagement, the building of a community, that as a tool, and to find a lot more purpose within it than just, you know, you're showing up to check in, check out as a job, building those, that value in how we continue to grow has been definitely altered over the last 5 years, where we find our purpose, how to maximize that, you know. So not that my opinion was like different, I just knew less of like how valuable I think we can be in a positive way to these communities, and doing best possible job I can and will continue to do so to make that feel and resonate with our team and our communities moving forward.
It's a great one.
Yeah, no kidding.
Next one. What's your favorite color? No, I'm just kidding. Hang on. Let's, what?
Blue, Nemesis.
Yeah.
Blue
Heart. An expensive mistake that you've made. Wait, Matt, I'll let you ask. These are Matt's questions.
No, okay. Maybe call an audible and go back to the old ones. These are like, I feel like I've written
I love this question because, and I'm actually really.
If you're asking real estate people, what's expensive in mistakes? It's like, every day. I make one small mistake that costs me a day, it's expensive. So that's not fair.
Let's go back to, because I'm actually interested in, both your responses, but I know Jess, just based on the feature wall and the records that were on it when I visited the other day, what are you listening to these days, music-wise?
Oh man, I'm all over the place. Music is like it's solace for me. It's such a important piece of, this is the soundtrack of my life and how we curate our stores and how people engage with that. Nothing makes me feel happier than putting people on game. You know, they never knew about something and you think you're getting a coffee, but really you're just like, whoa, what the hell is this playlist? This is awesome.
Yeah.
And which we curated a 60-hour long playlist that I put together myself, and it's just, you know, to listen to 60 hours of good music that is not going to really upset anybody. You got to be mindful of the language on some of these tracks. It's a lot of music in there, but soul, I listen to a lot of like Sam Cooke, Aretha Franklin, some jazz, but some more vocalist jazz like Chet Baker. I've been jamming a lot, and then I'm also like listening to like UK drill and grime rap. I'm listening like throwback classic hip hop, like Big L, Nas's Illmatic. The gamut is, it's big. But I had Illmatic on this morning. To me, is like the quintessential hip hop album. If you haven't listened to it, I think arguably one of the greatest albums across any genre, but is regarded as the best. And I've been listening to that since I was a kid, and it still hits me. You know, turn the speakers up, trying to get prep for your day, and then go front to back on that album. It's amazing.
How, just as a, before we get to Nick, did you find it a stressful process to curate 60 hours of music? That strikes me as like almost an insurmountable, like I get nervous when a couple people come over to my house and I got to put music on. Like, how does that?
If you ask anybody on my team, I think my biggest pet peeve is like music levels and how our system is sounding sonically and what's being played at the moment. And I'm constantly like I'll be in a meeting and then in my mind, I'll hear a song, like there's a pause or there's like a talking bit. I'm like, fuck, I didn't catch that. I got to delete this all thing. And I'm trying to like side, like stay engaged in the conversation. I'm just like, oh, where's that track on the playlist? Delete that. Cause it's going to bug me.
48.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, damn. It's not there's better people than I for sure to do it, but we know what we love and how we want things to sound. And I just figured I had to do that part of our business.
This is so funny though, cause we were standing in Pavilion the other day. We were talking about this some sound stuff. And then Jess goes, I mean, you guys are cool if like, you know, like our music is like everywhere in the space. And I'm like, Yes. We're good. That was kind of that was what I was hoping. I was hoping we would be on the same page with that.
I don't think
we can put a candle to his music taste. That's for sure.
Well, yeah. Oh, thanks, man.
Well, 90s hip hop had a lot of like skits, right? So there's a lot of talking parts. So
yeah. And some of them are pretty raw, man.
Yeah.
Everybody's staring at their feet.
Yeah. I'm just like, it's like 9 o'clock in the morning, and then, you know, the intro. I mean, you probably might not know the skit, but if you listen to it after this podcast, like the intro to Method Man, you know, like to the Wu-Tang Clan's Method Man.
Yeah.
If you put that on, you're like, shit, that shouldn't be on at 9 a.m. That shouldn't be on. Really? Yeah. Skits. Yeah. Okay, I gotta take that one off. But lots of skits.
And Nick,
I wish you would just skip me after this, but I did look at this recently, and again, this is funny, it goes back to family. I've got two daughters and my wife and at home, and my Alexa at home is connected to my music account. So my music account, when I'm trying to look back at what I'm listening to, what my favorites are now, completely polluted with a number of other things.
Happens to everybody.
In 2024, I've gotten a much deeper appreciation for Taylor Swift, because that is all that can be played in my house.
With these.
Ironically, but funny enough, I actually have gained much more of an appreciation when I stop and actually listen to the lyrics, like the writing, like, okay, like there's more behind the curtain here. So that's fair enough. And then, Big Red Machine is good. I like those guys. And then just for more, like I did music when I was young. And I like classical music. And anyway, so there's a guy, Niels Fromm, who does some great stuff.
Yeah, phenomenal. Cool. Yeah.
And that's kind of my jam these days. Taylor Swift and some quiet stuff once in a while.
Yeah, Niels Fromm and Taylor Swift. We got eclectic taste.
There's no skits in the house.
Last but not least, Matt.
Last but not least, this is a new one. We'll see if it lands. If you had to start your career over in a completely different industry, what would it be?
Who's... Hey, Nick, you want to take this one?
Sorry, Nick. Yeah, Nick.
Spare me.
That's a hard one. I think about things adjacent to what we do that I could see, you know, enjoying. But like, ironically, like, it's like, I think it would be interesting to be a lawyer in some context. That would be interesting to me. But then I'm like, I also like to be an architect. So my mind goes to like, if I had two different career paths, or if I looked at the world differently, I mean, actually both of those areas I find fascinating for different reasons. And I would probably lean into either if I had a reason to do it. But, you know, I think, as I say, sometimes if my dad was a shoemaker, I'd probably be interested in shoes. You can get me curious about just about anything. So I'm not sure what a different life would look like.
That's interesting. That's actually really interesting. If your dad must be a really interesting guy.
Yeah, well, he is. And just like, just, I can, I just, you know, like almost any topic, there's interesting things with it. I mean, there's so much to learn about almost any part of how the world works that I think if you lead with curiosity, it can take you to all kinds of different places. So I don't know where I would land in a different life.
Yeah.
It could be it could have been a lot of different things.
And Jess, I think this question was a success already. Yeah. Jess, guys, no pressure.
It's a great one. There's so many things, adjacent to what we do right now that I love. I love what we're doing. I've grown to love it even more and more as time has passed. But things as they relate to challenging design, things that could like push the needle forward, essentially, like challenging from design, challenging from a music standpoint, things that have to do with the creative part of the brain, but really, you know, backing it with the numbers, the data, how do you materialize this concept and have it have impact, you know? So, I would say things design and music related, branding related, all within that realm.
Yeah. Cool. Well, and it's like Adam said, you know, the execution was the thing that stuck out for him when he was down there. So no, I feel like this has been inspiring. So thanks, guys. This was a great
conversation. Yeah. And how And how can we find out more about, of course, what you're up to? Jess, of course, for Nemesis.
Yeah, our socials is just on Instagram. It's nemesis.coffee. That's where we park most of our time on social media. I'm honestly not the best when it comes to social media, but we've been lucky to build quite a following in our city there. And we have some great and high engagement there. Yeah, come follow along over there.
Cool. And Nick?
Marcon, just marcon.ca. I mean, we're telling our story in a bunch of different places right now, but if you start at Marcon, you'll find your way into a lot of the stuff we've talked about today. Mm.
Very cool. Fantastic. Well, thanks again for taking the time. That was a great conversation.
I always appreciate the time with you guys. I think your questions are great, and your openness to just kind of wade into the unknown around stuff is awesome. And how plugged in you guys are in the industry is always just a treat for me to be a part of. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, thank you for that.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So there you have it, folks, our discussion with Nick Pallella and Jess Reno from Nemesis and Marcon, respectively.
Yeah, I loved having those guys on the show. We ran long, but I think it was worth it. And
felt short to me. I feel like I actually had, like, when we stopped, I was like, man, I got 19 more questions here.
I know. I feel like it's always great having two people on the show, but the two perspectives limits how far you can go in terms of, like, because I mean, there was a million questions I was left with too. I think we almost have to get those guys back for part two, because there was so many questions about the market and stuff that I wanted to ask. And I feel like you could also double click on retail and what's going on in commercial spaces, and also just up and coming areas and restaurants and all the whatever, because all of that ties into what we do on this show, which is talk about how everything touches real estate, right? Or how
and the development of the city. You know, you did mention the market, Adam. One thing that is exciting for us is Chief Economist of the BC Real Estate Association, Brendan Augmanson, is back next week giving his 2025 projections and a discussion, a wide-ranging discussion about the market. So if you were upset that we didn't get to any market talk with Nick and Jess, it's coming next week. So don't.
Well, here's one thing. It does feel like there's a much different energy in the market this year to start. Is this a new year, new me, new home, or is it actually going to be more of a reflection of what's going to happen this year? The verdict is still out, but things are definitely picking up in the market. And it'll be an interesting conversation to cover with Brendan, because, I mean, obviously we bring him back as often as possible just because he's such an insightful guy.
Yeah, no, it's...
He gets it right. Usually. Yeah. So
you know what? We talk about it. His prediction his forecast for 2024 was pretty much bang on. So stay tuned for 2025s. What else do we have before we cut for the day, Adam? We have VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com, our website where all things real estate related live. Head over to VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com for things like the LiveWire. This is our weekly mailer. We have deal of the month, stats, different types of stats, sales ratios where you can dig into your neighborhood or price band that you're interested in. We have VIP access to pre-sales like 102 and Park with great incentives. And we also have, of course, tried and true private client services.
Yeah, Matt. And if you are not using PCS, you are standing still while the rest of us power walk by. You get sold prices, days on market. You basically get realtor level information for free. It's available at your fingertips over at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com. Geez, I feel like the Micro Machine guy from back in the day who's just ripping through it. But here's the other thing, Matt, skytraincondo.ca, where you can sign up for all the new developments going on around SkyTrain stops. And this is a site that we've been building this year that we're super excited about. And so many people from the VREP community have signed up. If you're not on there and you want to watch pre-sale projects that are coming, go create your own account, sign up, and what do they say? All aboard?
Get on board. Get on board. SkytrainCondo.ca. Get on board.
Yeah.
And if fantastic. You want to talk about getting on board or anything else, you can try me at 778-847-2854 or Matt at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Or you can try me at 778-866-4574 or Adam at VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
And of course, we got that nonpartisan line, that Kokomo line, info@VancouverRealEstatePodcast.com.
Well, have a great week. Man, banger of an episode
good to be back.
Yeah, the hiatus is over and happy new year. And I hope your real estate goals are in place. And this is going to be a great year.
We'll talk to you next week.
2,000 Faces for Radio. Subscribe today.